This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hope you had a great weekend. We're back in action now, and I'm sure you've seen all the events and nothing slowing down. Happy to be here. Eli Lake at the bottom of the hour, columnist for the Free Press, contributing editor at Commentary, host of the podcast Breaking History, and he also, his connections in the Middle East are phenomenal. He's going to bring us inside the perilous negotiations with Hamas. Also, we're watching a bunch of things. Speaker Johnson will host a press conference in about an hour at the U.S. Capitol as the lockout goes to 6 days, and Lawrence Jones is standing by. Before we get to Lawrence, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
If the president decides that the negotiations are absolutely going nowhere, then there will start to be layoffs. But I think that everybody's still hopeful that when we get a fresh start at the beginning of the week.
That is Kevin Hassett. Of course, the shutdown lingers. No end in sight as the Trump team looks to cut thousands of jobs, perhaps. I don't know how this ends, but we cut through the posturing and the politics right here.
Number two.
They are the ones that are making it a war zone. They need to get out of Chicago. If they're not going to focus on the worst of the worst, which is what the president said they were going to do, they need to get the heck out.
Really? Governor Pritzker, there's a reality and there's your reality. ICE alone and unafraid as local cops in Chicago and Portland stand down while protesters act up. And while judges are blocking the National Guard from coming to their aid, do these Democratic local officials know they are siding with the anarchists and the criminals? Let's make sure the American people know who the good guys are.
Number one.
Look, it's Hamas, okay? So I'm not telling you here that these are people I trust 100%, nor should we, but they have said, basically, that they agreed to his proposal and the framework for releasing the hostages. That's an enormous achievement.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio, almost home. Delegations from all sides arrive in Egypt to pressure Hamas to release all the hostages and put down their arms. We bring you inside the delay of game tactics and what got Trump to curse at Bibi and why I understand both sides of that issue. Lawrence, you're not sick of talking to me yet? I assume, because it's already been 3 hours from Fox and Friends. You got to just give me a few more minutes.
That's right. It's always good being here with you. Great show last night.
Yeah, thank you very much. One Nation last night, a lot going on. But I guess we have three number one stories. Yeah. But let's start with Hamas story.
Okay.
Delegations have arrived. It looks like the prime minister's advisor is there, two anonymous officials with Mossad and Shin Bet and professional staff from the IDF. And what they're seeing is the coordinators there, including Ram Dermer. They look like they're the people that would be put in place to execute the release of the hostages. For example, you don't just open up the tunnels.
Right, right.
You have to get them out. You got to make sure they're okay. The Red Cross has got to get in.
And, Brian, I know you watched the Sunday shows, and Marco Rubio did all of the Sunday shows yesterday. And that's the point that he was trying to get all of the hosts to understand is that this is not a turnkey situation. It's going to be a little bit more complicated. Let me go back to Bibi and the president. Although both of them want peace, both of them are juggling two different things. Bibi is just talking about his country's survival, and he's right at the border of this, whereas the president wants Israel to survive, but he's also juggling the Muslim Arab world as well. That's why Bibi had to make that phone call to Qatar as well to say, hey, I'm sorry about going in your – okay, I get it, to bring them together. I think the president is an optimist, even though he realized that – Hamas is thugs. Because he's gotten the Arab world, Brian, no other president could do this, by the way. No other president could get Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, all these people to come together to put pressure on Hamas for once to take the proposal.
So here's the quote that Lawrence is referring to that appeared in Axios. Trump to Netanyahu on Gaza talks. You're always so bleeping negative. Here's how Bibi told Trump, this is nothing to celebrate. After they announced Hamas said, we'll agree to this, but we have some issues we want to discuss. He said, there's nothing to celebrate. That doesn't mean anything. A U.S. official with knowledge told Axios, Trump fired back, I don't know why you're always so bleeping negative. This is a win. Take it.
Well, I haven't talked to anyone concerning this situation, but that sounds like a situation that could happen. The president is always optimistic in these type of cases. He wants peace so bad. He's negotiating, put a lot of his capital on the line. And you know, the prime minister is cautiously optimistic, saying, well, it's Hamas. And by the way, they also saying, as part of the deal, which is, wasn't a part of the agreement, to release all of their political prisoners, they're calling them. Now, these are terrorists. And so that's a sticking point for the Israelis. It's like, okay, it's one thing for you guys to release our hostages, but now you want us to turn over the people. Are these people going to go back to the battlefield? Also, they want to just put their weapons in a storage? That's not destroying the weapons.
Right. They're going to give it to Egypt to store their rockets.
For what?
Yeah.
To go
back to the tunnels. So this is what Admiral James Stavridis said about where we're at. Cut 10.
I'll tell you one thing to keep an eye on that no one is talking about. It's the tunnel complex underneath Gaza. Only about half of that has been destroyed. The Israelis will want to decommission that. Once they do, I think the appetite for war there is pretty much over. Queue up Arab peacekeeping force. That's how this could turn out.
It can't just be decommissioned. They can't be able to go to it ever again. I don't mean clean. When he says decommission, I just want to be clear. You just can't clear out the tunnel. You got to fill it with cement. You got to make sure that they can't go back to it, because there's a big question mark here. This whole peacekeeping force, which I support the idea of it, but are they going to be successful? Are they going to be able to maintain peace in Gaza?
Yeah, I want you to hear, put it this way. I mentioned this on the show, but there's only one person who could have great terms with the Arab world and still be in great terms with Israel at a time like this. So when he talks to Qatar, he doesn't say, well, I know you're for Israel. He goes, no, but we have deals. Qatar, UAE, Saudi Arabia. You saw how he was greeted on every stop. That's Bahrain, right. And Indonesia, Egypt, Turkey. They're all in on this. This is what gives me more optimism than you have, is because of the pressure from the Arab world. It's not, I hope they accept the president's and the UK's peace plan. If you just said Tony Blair is going to be in there and they're going to rebuild, I'm like, well, dude, that's not, you know, please. But when I see the fact that the Arab League is involved, it gives me hope. And then I hear, with the one part of all the Sunday shows they could not criticize is the point in the peace process, 20-point plan.
No way.
Nobody was criticizing. Listen to Andrea Mitchell on Meet the Press, Cut 11.
The important thing is that Hamas is now really isolated. Ooh. The Arab countries all came together in New York when they were here for the UN meetings with the president. That is a huge factor. And partly that's because of Israel's biggest mistake, which was to attack Qatar. This united the Arab world. It infuriated President Trump. For the first time, we're seeing President Trump really putting pressure on Netanyahu to stop the bombing. When he said that, it was very significant. So this could be transformational. And, you know, if this were to work out and it would be the Abraham Accords, it would be recognition of Israel, transform the whole region, and President Trump would deserve that Nobel Prize.
I'm shocked. I agree with everything that she said right there. And, you know, I side more when it comes to Qatar. I side more with Israel on it, but I'm not the president of the United States. They were harboring terrorists. Now, they say they were using this as a place for them to do negotiations, and then one of the citizens died as well. I don't care where you are. If you're a terrorist, I think that's fair game for Israel. But the president smartly used that as an opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to get angry with Israel. I'm going to show that I'm fair. I go against the Arab world when it comes to radical Islamic terrorism, and then I'm going to go at Israel. And I think that created a moment to show that he was an honest broker.
All right, so I want to hear the best soundbite. Scott Galloway, who was on our show, he was when he had a book out. He is not a big Trumper, necessarily an anti-Trumper. I don't know, Allison, would you say he's anti-Trump? I wouldn't think so. But, you know, he's mostly, you see him a lot on CNN, MSNBC. Mm-hmm. I thought he just nailed this. And that's why I want to be on MSNBC, and I left both anchors with their jaws agape. They had nothing to say. To put in perspective what Israel's up against and what they've done, cut 12.
2,200 American servicemen killed at Pearl Harbor. We go on to kill 3.5 million Japanese, including 100,000 in one night. 2,800 Americans in 9/11. We go on to kill 400,000 people in Afghanistan and Iraq. We weren't accused of genocide. You had, if Mexico had elected a jihadist cartel to run their country, and then they incurred into Texas, and on a per capita basis killed 35,000 people, or the population of the University of Texas, and on the way back took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under tunnels, what would we do? It'd be the great Sonora radioactive parking lot. But Jews are not allowed, and Israel is not allowed to prosecute a war. And they are prosecuting a war more humanely than we have done. The ratio of combatants to civilians is, of civilian death to combatant mortality is lower than it was in Mosul, lower than it was in Japan, lower than it was in Germany. So there's just a different standard for Jews in Israel when it comes to prosecuting a war. They're allowed to fight back to a truce. But unlike America or any other Western nation that has attacked this viciously, they're not allowed to win a war. It's a double standard.
Great. Very well put, right?
I mean, just spot on analysis. And I would take it a step further. Although I feel for the children in Gaza, the people in the Palestinian Authority, they do have some responsibility here. They voted them in. They are radical Islamists. And one of the consequences when your radical Islamist leadership decides to attack a foreign nation and war is brought to your doorstep, that's part of the calculation here.
But no one
wants to talk about that.
I want to talk about what's happening with ICE and the horrific way they're being treated in Portland and Chicago in just a moment. More Lawrence Jones. In the bottom of the hour, we go inside the numbers on Hamas and the progress we hope they're making in Egypt. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What kind of a country are we living in? And this raid at this building is emblematic of what ICE and CBP and the President of the United States, Kristi Noem and Greg Bovino, are trying to do. They want mayhem on the ground. They want to create the war zone so that they can send in even more troops.
So that is Governor Pritzker running for president at the risk of creating chaos in his city to a point that you can't even imagine. Now we have ICE fighting with protesters and cops being told to stand down while ICE gets boxed out or Border Patrol gets boxed out in the middle of the street. Their lives are at risk, Lawrence Jones.
So first of all, the comment about the war zone. Okay, first of all, Chicago's already a war zone. Okay, people are getting shot. The gangs
not where
the
he is.
Right, but the people in the community on the day-to-day basis are getting shot. So stop the narrative about ICE has turned it into a war zone. The other thing is, it's federal agents. They're law enforcement. When you hear 1033 on the radio, you respond. Now, they're disputing, Brian, what we all saw with the reporting with Bill Malusian about the laptop that's in the SWAT car that tells you exactly what the commander said. Now we got the audio of the commander saying, stand down. Don't support them. That's unheard of for a cop. The police union is slamming them. Chicago and the state is slamming them for this, Brian.
Yeah, so Pritzker then said that Trump ordered 400 members of the Texas National Guard for deployment in Illinois, Oregon, and other locations within the United States. No officials from the federal government called him directly. But they are suing, and they did stop them from arriving in Oregon. And it does look like they can't. Then they said, okay, I'm going to use California National Guard. And it looks like they're going to stop that. So it looks like Border Patrol, ICE, ATF, and FBI, are they going to be on their own in that federal building now?
Well, so that's exactly what happened in California. Remember, that was the pretext for the National Guard showing up in
and
California.
And the Marines.
Exactly. So you have agents that are doing their job. They get slammed. Rocks, they're shooting at them. You know, they're throwing back the canisters when they're trying to disperse the crowd. And so they call in the National Guard. So my thing is this: okay, if you don't want the National Guard, then the local cops have to support the federal agents, which they want to do, but the leadership, because of politics, don't want them to do it.
So I want you to bring it to this woman, who's the police chief, director of Portland's ICE office, Camilla Walmsley, said that the facility has endured more than 100 straight nights of violence, with the Portland police largely absent under the direction of the mayor and the city. It's frustrating, she says. She added that nightly protests have escalated beyond changes in signs, with bottle rockets striking the ICE building, rocks shattering windows, lasers targeting their eyes. Despite these accounts, Day offered a very different picture. This is the police chief, published her editorial in the Oregonian, saying She is deeply proud of how Portlanders showed up for one another continuously and equally proud of her police department. Unfortunately, national portrayals distort reality. Portland is 145 square miles, yet one city block has drawn outsized attention, sometimes months of years old, paint a picture that is not consistent with Portland's everyday actions. What is wrong with her?
It's a hotbed.
To put that in writing?
Yeah. It's a hotbed for Antifa, and you guys haven't done anything about it, by the way. By the way, why did y'all arrest the conservative journalists on the ground, and you didn't arrest the person that socked the other conservative journalist in her eye and gave her a black eye? She walks to the cops and points to the person that did this, and y'all did nothing. Yeah. But the conservative journalist on the ground that didn't do anything to assault anyone, you arrest him for what? Enjoy the lawsuit.
But if Pritzker is saying these things and Tammy Duckworth is saying these things, Pritzker actually came out, I wonder if we have the clip, and said the Donald Trump is looking to arrest black and brown people. Are you kidding me? Here's and criticized Kristi Noem. Cut 15.
The secretary doesn't know what she's talking about. She, frankly, says that people are clapping. They're not. They're booing her on the street, and they're booing ICE and CBP. They're marching, the CBP marching on a beautiful Sunday in Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. They're raiding neighborhoods where instead of going after the bad guys, they're just picking up people who are brown and black and then checking their credentials. Are you a U.S. citizen?
So he just was talking about CBP that are going after brown and black people. CBP is 50% Hispanic. So you mean to tell me that the Hispanic workforce of CBP is targeting people of their own racial background? I mean, that's just insane. The other thing, and Brian, you noted this morning, he talked about the kids that were zip-tied, which is what we use in law enforcement when we don't have enough of cuffs. The kids were detained because they were in an apartment full of members of TDA, Trinity Agua. So the story is more about the people, the kids being zip-tied, than where they were located.
And I don't think Todd Lyons says they weren't zip-tied, too.
He said they were zip-tied, but he goes they were temporarily zip-tied as they cleared the apartment. And as soon as they cleared the apartment, they released once they were able to determine, you know, who was who. But this is standard operating procedure. I mean, would it have been better if they would have handcuffed them? I mean, you have to detain people.
Right. So what you did is I think they have to do a better job of saying, instead of just saying we have TDA members, I want to know exactly. Show me all the pictures.
Yeah, mugshots.
Yeah, give me an idea of all the pictures of all these guys. And listen to Brandon Johnson. He said, by the word, he uses the word tyranny, but the tyranny, he means ICE. Cut 17.
This is not about deportation. This is not about community safety. This president has declared war on poor people, and it's going to be working people that are going to lead the charge to transform this country and to push back against tyranny. This is the time now.
Poor people? What is he even talking about? Poor people, black, white? He's trying to create a civil war.
Excuse me, sir. Would you just look at all of the black residents that are coming to your city council meetings that are upset that you let the migrants, because you want to be a sanctuary, take all the resources from the poor people in their community? You can't have it both ways. Either it's Trump targeting the poor people or it's your policies, but it can't be both.
All right, Lawrence Jones, thanks so much.
Thanks,
I've worn
bro.
You out. Now yeah, you got to go
I'm
to jiu-jitsu, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. Eli Lake next.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Obviously, we have to make sure Hamas is also doing their part in this regard. But there are a lot of opportunities here for whoever wants to sabotage it to do so. And that includes Hamas, by the way, or elements linked to Hamas sabotaging it by in fact, you know, creating conditions that are not viable for an exchange. So no one said this is going to be easy. This is good progress, but a lot of work remains. But it is the most significant development in this entire situation in a very long time. And it's the closest we've been in a long time to seeing a path towards the release of every hostage.
And just to give you the latest, the Israeli delegation that Marco Rubio is talking about has arrived in Cairo. Hamas has sent in their delegate, ironically, there was a target for assassination over in Doha, Qatar, Khalil al-Hayya. He's Hamas's top negotiators and several other senior political officials. They seem to support the 20-point-plus deal for peace in the area and to stop the fighting. So we'll see how that goes. Izzad El-Haddad is also there. He is on the ground in Gaza, and he rose to lead Hamas after Mohammed Sinwar and Yahya Sinwar were both killed in action after they started this whole thing and charted and constructed the October 7th attack coming up on the two-year mark. Eli Lake joins us now, columnist for the Free Press, contributing editor and commentary host of the podcast Breaking History. Eli, what do you think is going to be coming out of the meetings in Cairo?
Well, I hope it will at least be the first phase, which is the return of the hostages living and dead, and then Israel will begin its phased pullback, although I think that the final deal, they would still have control of kind of the perimeter of Gaza. Let's hope that. But I read the statements from Hamas on Friday not as an agreement to the full release of the hostages. What I read was we're willing to negotiate the release of the hostages, but certain conditions need to be met. And they used deliberately vague language. So I don't know what it means. They have a history of inserting poison pills in these things. Hamas's, I think, position is tenuous at this point. Let's be real. The great diplomatic accomplishment from Donald Trump, and he deserves enormous credit for this, is less the particulars of the plan, which is vague in parts, and it's important, you know, maybe it's important that it's vague. It's rather that he got Turkey and Qatar in particular. Those are the final patrons of Hamas to say enough is enough and agree to these things in principle, which includes you can't rule Gaza and you have to disarm and your leaders need to be exiled. That's a big deal. Do they mean it? Is this more double talk? Is this more double gaming? We're going to find out very shortly. But I'm worried a little bit because the initial thing was once both sides agree, then that's, you know, 72 hours the hostages have to be released. That window is passed. So what are we negotiating over? And we'll find out soon enough.
We are. The people are in place. Mossad's got people there. So Shin Bet has people there. They have their obviously their names are not there. They're trying to also work out logistics of how you get released the hostages. You know, what has to be done? Where are they going to go? Who's going to treat them? Would the Red Cross get in there? And then, sadly, they got to release like 1,700 Palestinians, Hamas members, people with blood on their hands, with life sentences. They're going to be let go, too. So that's going to be the exchange. But the thing that has me optimistic is that there's such buy-in from the neighbors on this plan. So that means there's going to be so much pressure on Hamas that and Israel says, look, I told you we're going to stop fighting. So you can't blame Israel. So if they say we don't like this plan and when they have extreme demands, Israel now has a little bit more leverage to go in there and finish them off, which is not going to be easy. IDF members will die, too.
Oh, well, I mean, the fighting is brutal. It's house to house. It's urban warfare. That's the nature of a war against an enemy. It's really unprecedented. This is the first time you've seen a kind of armed group that is effectively the sovereign of, you know, 2 million people. They're supposed to be the government of 2 million people. Launch a war and then having over 20 years built an infrastructure honeycombed with all of the civilian targets, then hide, you know, behind the skirts of their women and underneath the schools of their children and the mosques where people pray. That is unprecedented. Even ISIS was not that cynical in its strategy. Obviously, Hamas doesn't wear uniforms. They have been trying to maximize civilian casualties. For them, it is part of winning an information war to have as many of the people that they're supposed to be protecting killed in the war that they started. That moral clarity, I just want to say I am so appreciative, Brian. You've never lost that insight. You understand that, and you've said it over and over again. But there are, you know, I think majorities now in Europe and America that have lost sight of that, and Israel's become the villain.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, you know, sadly, you could argue the strategy worked, but did it work? And that's why this deal, and this is why the diplomacy is so significant, because if this ends with Hamas no longer in power, disarmed, exiled leaders, most of their leaders have been killed anyway, there's a chance for a new day. There's actually a chance for a two-state solution. And that, I think, is enormous. But it's a hinge point. If Hamas manages to sort of worm their way to remain in power so they can say, we defeated Israel, even though they clearly lost the war, if they can remain kind of clinging to power and holding their, you know, holding Palestinians hostage like this, well, then the war will be for naught, and we'll just see another one in the future. So this is a really big hinge moment. And now is the time, my hope is that now is the time that the pressure will continue to be brought to bear from Turkey and Qatar in particular. Those are the last friends that Hamas has. And if they've really turned, then now we're going to have to see it.
Hey, you know, the one thing is, I watched so many people who are so critical of the president, but when it comes to this 20-point deal, nobody's critical. They think we're at we're at an advanced point. Even if it falls apart, they're not going to say that Trump is wrong. They're going to say, wow, this is thought out. He got buy-in from Arab neighbors. Now, think about this, Eli. I've never seen a president, usually if you have a president that's really not pro-Israel, or they're so pro-Israel that they alienate the Arab world. This president actually has the Arab world on his side. UAE, you saw that tour that he went through, Qatar in particular, and Saudi Arabia, whatever you think, Bahrain. Now you also have a situation where, as despicable as this Turkish president is, he gets along with Trump. In fact, I just saw a report this morning that Turkey might reestablish a flight route back into Israel, back into Tel Aviv. So they might start bringing planes back and forth there. So that's just a small gain. So he's tight with the Arab world. At the same time, there's nobody more popular in Israel than Donald Trump. So he's in the perfect position to do something unprecedented. So I'm choosing to be hopeful. So James Charvides, the admiral, said that you got to blow up the rest of the tunnels. They're only half gone. He also said this, cut nine.
I think they have very few choices at this point. It's like the billboards in New Jersey, last exit before the tunnel. That's the proposition they're being presented with. So if they release the hostages, yes, their negotiating leverage goes down significantly. On the other hand, Israel's tired of this war, too. They want those hostages back. But I don't think there's a deep-seated enthusiasm in Jerusalem to just continue the war.
And I know he goes to Israel a lot. Your thoughts, Eli?
He's absolutely right. Israel's not built for these kinds of long wars. It is it's an army of citizens. This war has disrupted the lives of so many millions of Israelis and families. And yes, there's a real sense that they want to bring the war to an end. That's true. But there's also a sense that the war will be for naught if Hamas remains in power. And this is where I'm hopeful that there have been some scenes that you can find on social media now, and we've seen this now for really 9 months. Regular Gazans want Hamas to take the deal. Regular Gazans are furious at Hamas. They understand what so many of the Free Palestine, you know, demonstrators in the West do not understand, that Hamas is not the representative of the Palestinian people, that Hamas is an oppressor of the Palestinian people. And that's the message that really we need to focus on, because I think there's another dimension here, which is that in our society, if you have significant factions of people who think that Hamas are heroic and think that October 7th was a glorious act of resistance, that speaks to a sickness in our own culture. That is deeper than just an opinion about the Middle East. And we have to address that, because it's not coming from freaks and weirdos, although they are freaks and weirdos. It's coming from college professors. It's coming from people that are at the commanding heights of our culture. It's coming from Ta-Nehisi Coates. So when we have to address that, because that says something about who we are. Because if you are glorifying the martyrs, as many college campuses will be doing tomorrow on the anniversary of October 7th, then you hate America. And you don't believe in our democratic experiment. And that's a really big thing that I think we have to address, not by restricting speech, but by using our speech in such a way to say that this is not acceptable. We will no longer kind of tolerate this. We will not turn a blind eye as you make our universities factories for kind of, you know, like anti-American radicals who have no useful skills in our economy.
Eli, so finally, your prediction, one to 10 being peace, I mean, a deal done, hostages out. What are the chances? 10 being yes, 1 being no. What are the chances of we seeing a hostage release this week?
5, 50-50.
Okay. I'll take it. Eli Lake, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Appreciate it. And check out his podcast, too, Breaking History, and read his columns on the Free Press and contributing editor at Commentary. All right, and we come back. I take your calls. You have a lot on your mind, especially after this weekend. 1-866-408-7669. You also saw the celebration of the Navy's 250th birthday. The optics were phenomenal. Even the First Lady was overwhelmed by what she saw, and she got into it. And the Navy was pumped up. Unlike the generals who sat there stoically, this group, all in white, were happy to be saluted 250 years of glory. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Now listen up, everyone, okay? I summon all of you here today to address a serious problem, okay? Our military is gay as hell. And I'm not just talking about the Navy. Thanks to failed liberal policies, our army has never been gayer, and yet it's also never been fatter. Make that make sense.
So that was 60 Minutes. SNL is cold open, and Trump is so upset by it, he wants to sue him and pull him off the air. I don't know, Allison, did you watch it? I it was so not funny.
The cold open?
Yeah. I thought it was absolutely awful. And I, you know, I'll be open to it. I like the guy playing Trump over Alec Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought, and the first game show? Are you kidding me?
I didn't see the first game
Jeopardy
show. I saw the cold open.
With Bad Bunny, who is just, I guess people like his music, but man, he certainly is not entertaining. But I just thought the cold open was absolutely terrible. And I thought the Weekend Update, I'm like.
Really? You didn't think anything that Colin Jost said in that clip we just played was entertaining?
No.
No?
Well, I don't know. I mean, what happens is when it's done right, you have shots at the other side, like not just blatant craziness. So they make Pete seem totally unhinged. And then they have Trump come out and say things that he's totally detached. Let's get started with the show. All right, same season, few new faces on the cast. That's the only difference.
See, I didn't think Colin Joe sounded unhinged with Pete. I thought it was entertaining. We were all laughing in the control room here over it. Here's a little bit more just to really get you annoyed.
Now back to the fat thing. Our military will now have the same rules as any good frat party. No fat chicks. And if you're a fat dude, God, you better be funny as hell. In summary, this is the whole meeting. No fuggos. No fatties. No facial hair. No body hair. Just hot, shredded, hairless men who are definitely not gay. Because this is serious. We are facing the greatest threat to freedom and democracy the world has ever known. And we all know what that threat is. Late night TV.
Okay. You think it's funny?
I thought it was
Pete,
funny.
Do you think it's funny too?
Pete, do you think it's funny?
I was laughing.
Eric?
It was pretty good.
Oh.
We were laughing at some, we have some real, you know.
I was looking forward to it. I watched it back.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. And know what I said? Nothing to use here. I didn't think you guys watched it. That's why I didn't send any notes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're lucky we do. I mean, at some other point in the show, we have more stuff from the Weekend Update, too, which you probably won't laugh at, but we got to laugh about in here.
You think it's funny? I don't know.
They're just, some of them are just funny jokes. They might make you a little uncomfortable, but we can still technically air them. But, you know, it was, I don't know. I also am a fan of Colin Jost. I thought it was a funny rant with Pete. I don't think it was too mean-spirited, but.
All right, so here's, would you pull from Diddy and Elon Musk? You want to do that?
Let's do it.
Cut 39.
Sean Combs was sentenced on Friday to 4 years in prison, and
I'll be honest, it's hard for me to enjoy watching someone I love get punished, but that's what Diddy would do.
It was reported that Elon Musk has become the first person to be worth more than $500 billion. Wow, shout out to Tylenol.
We got a smile from you with the Tylenol joke.
All right. All right, so let's hear Jane Goodall.
Chimpanzee researcher Jane Goodall has died at the age of 91. The family requests that in lieu of sending flowers, please throw feces.
So we got a little giggle.
Yeah, that's
we did
funny.
Okay.
That was pretty funny. So I don't know. You know, I'm disappointed because I used to really like back and forth. Like, how could they not do Kamala Harris's book thing?
They had one joke that actually wasn't funny. Like, why she lost? Because I'm a black woman. I was like,
do you know how many crazy things have been happening on the left? And then you got Crockett. You can't mock Crockett. She has given you 7 months of pure comedy gold. You can't mock it.
So
at the end of the show, you're like, okay. I mean, that's really what, you know, on late night network television, they're probably going to get a 5 rating, right? First of the season. And you just know president's crazy, Pete's unhinged, and even though it's comedy, the left is pretty good. Chuck Schumer, you can't make fun of Chuck Schumer.
And then usually they will go after Schumer. Like last season, they would go after him a little bit. But I didn't pull it yet, but during the weekend update, they referenced something about Mondani. The audience erupted in applause. Like it wasn't the joke, but just like how everyone, like they said his name and they all cheered. I'm like, that's concerning.
That's New York.
Yeah. Well,
that's why he's going to win.
And that's the SNL audience.
Right. But if the SNL was brave, they'd go socialist. You're not even a Republican. You can go Cuomo against, you can have fun with Cuomo's extreme behavior, the women, COVID, all this stuff. Or this guy who hates the country. I don't know. They just can't do it. You think Lorne Michaels is 100 years old. You think at one point he's going to say, I don't really need the money. I might as well balance out the show and make comedy comedy.
Oh, absolutely not. It's all about control.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action, back at 1211 6th Avenue, right here in New York, New York. Michael Goodwin from New York, New York, New York Post, but his columns are nationwide and have nationwide implications, especially he's got fantastic context with the White House. We're talking about one of our big three stories with him. Senator John Kennedy, one of the most interesting, entertaining people in Washington, period. Senator John Kennedy's got a brand new book out. It's out tomorrow, How to Test Negative for Stupid. He's going to be joining us in studio, which will be fantastic. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
If the president decides that the negotiations are absolutely going nowhere, then there will start to be layoffs. But I think that everybody's still hopeful that when we get a fresh start at the beginning of the week.
That is Kevin Hassett, the economic advisor. The shutdown lingers. No end in sight. The Trump team looks to cut thousands of jobs. I don't know how this ends, but we cut through the posturing and the politics.
Number two.
They are the ones that are making it a war zone. They need to get out of Chicago. If they're not going to focus on the worst of the worst, which is what the president said they were going to do, they need to get the heck out.
Really, Governor Pritzker, what an embarrassment you are to this country. ICE alone and unafraid as local cops in Chicago and Portland stand down while protesters act up, while judges are blocking the National Guard from coming to their aid. Do these Democratic local officials know they're siding with anarchists and criminals?
Number one.
Look, it's Hamas, okay? So I'm not telling you here that these are people I trust 100%, nor should we, but they have said, basically, that they agree to his proposal and the framework for releasing the hostages. That's an enormous achievement.
True. The Secretary of State doing every Sunday show, almost home. Delegations from all sides arrive in Egypt to pressure Hamas to release all the hostages and put down their arms. We bring you inside the delay of game tactics and what got Trump to curse at Bibi, and I understand both sides of it. So Michael Goodwin writes, Hamas hits a new low for being too slow on following through on the peace deal. And you say, predictably, Hamas is to blame here. The terror group made it perfectly clear it's in no hurry to end the war. It started almost exactly 2 years ago. I do hear supplies are running out. We do know that all their leaders are basically dead. and they almost lost the Doha clan, who are living lives of luxury over in Qatar because of a strike that missed its target from Israel. I get the sense, and this is what changed for me, is I see so many other nations say, I love the president's 20-point plan. This is the framework we can get behind. And they are the people that could get Hamas's attention. Michael Goodwin, you're still not optimistic, are you?
Good morning, Brian. No, I think to be optimistic at this point would be to assume that Hamas is going to act in the best interest of the Palestinians. I don't see that in the cards. I think that the answer that it gave President Trump about, okay, we'll do the hostage release. But then it said on these other things, they need to be negotiations. And given how many countries endorse this, including their patron Qatar, I think that was a bad sign. It was a sign that we'll say yes, but it's yes, but, and the but could go on endlessly because it's a 20-point plan. President Trump gave them 4 days basically to accept the entire thing. They seemed to accept the first step, but then even then there was a but. So I just don't think that Hamas wants a settlement. Hamas wants to keep the pot boiling. That is its reason. I mean, to accept a settlement, Brian, essentially is to accept Israel's right to exist. That's what you do when you make a treaty or a deal with your opponent. In this case, you are accepting that they are legitimate. And Hamas was created in its charter. It is about eliminating Israel. So this, I think, agreeing with Israel, agreeing with the United States, essentially that Israel has a right to exist in secure borders. I don't think Hamas is ever going to get there.
Well, you did say they shouldn't stop the bombing. You thought that was a mistake. They did keep bombing on Saturday, but they said, I guess they stopped today. If they're going to release the hostages, Israel does not leave Gaza. It goes to the yellow line, which is where they were in August. So that's something. And what they want to do is get the 50-plus out. And if you do that and the Arab League comes in, they get this peace committee that the president leads, and they have a transition to Palestinian technocrats, which may or may not exist. I haven't seen any, but maybe they do exist. I know Israel has identified clans within Gaza that they're looking to empower, like we did in Ramadi and Fallujah. So we started finding people that we could work with that and turn over power to. So they are doing some of that. So I'm more optimistic than you because Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, for goodness sakes, others, UAE, they all know how to pressure these guys. And they all know where their money comes from. And I think that they want it to end too.
Yes, I agree with you, Brian. And I think it's a very good plan. My only cynicism is about Hamas. It's not about the others. I think certainly the Saudis, Turkey, everybody wants this settled. Israel, the United States, UAE, even the Qataris, I think, want it settled. The problem is, who is going to force Hamas? Who is going to say to Hamas, you know, you are, if you don't come to the table in good faith, then you are an outcast, you are cast out. And that eventually gets you back to the military option, which, of course, Israel prefers because it has no trust. It has no reason. I mean, we're coming up tomorrow, right, October 7th. And Israel has no reason to trust, but in many, many reasons from October 7th to distrust and to want to wipe Hamas off the face of the earth. That's what Hamas deserves. But if they want to save themselves, President Trump has thrown them a lifeline. And all these other countries, by signaling their support for this plan, have essentially urged Hamas, get on board and you will live. But I don't think I think that Hamas is the ultimate dead ender. We shall see. But that's what's causing me to doubt the good news here.
I want you to hear what Marco Rubio says gives him hope. Cut eight.
We are dealing at the end of the day with Hamas. This is the group that on October 7th, 2 years ago, came in and basically butchered babies and teenage girls at a music concert and took hostages and did horrific atrocities. That's who we're dealing with here, okay? We're not dealing with a political movement. We are dealing with killers and savages and terrorists. That's who we're dealing with. That said, what gives you hope here is that at least there now is a framework for how all this can come to an end and those hostages can be released. What gives you hope here is the fact that for the first time in this entire endeavor, you have the United Arab Emirates, you have Qatar, you have Saudi Arabia, you have Turkey, you have Egypt, you have Jordan, you have Indonesia.
So that's just it. You know what? Anthony Blinken never would have said that first half. He said October 7th, a horrific day. He never would have ran off exactly who they killed and what they did because they were always hedging. This is this one thing about the president. He has managed to not alienate the Arab world while being the best friend that Israel ever had. I don't know anybody else who could be do this.
No, I think that's a good point, Brian, that Trump has made a real effort to court the Arab world. I mean, this is good for America to have the respect and the trust in the Middle East, first among Israel, of course, but also among the Arabs. I mean, the whole Abraham Accords is based on the idea of mutual trust. Overseen and brokered by the United States of America. And I think what the president has in mind here is a big expansion of the Abraham Accords, certainly bringing in Saudi Arabia, among others. I mean, it would really be the normalization of relations between Israel and the Arab nations around it and in the region, even if Turkey were to join. You would have an extraordinary development and a bulwark for peace in the most volatile region of the world historically. That would be terrific. Right now, Hamas is the obstacle to that. And I don't know who's going to force Hamas to the table. It can be the United States. It probably can't be Israel, but it can be Egypt. It can be the Saudis. It can be the Qataris.
Yeah, especially Egypt that allowed those tunnels to be built, that allowed the weapons to flow. But the wall stood up to make sure no Palestinian refugee families got a chance to encamp in their country like the Syrians did in Turkey and throughout Europe and throughout Jordan. They don't want to see the Palestinians. These people don't care about the Palestinians. You remember that. When Syria was the most brutal civil war possible, there was no one really calling out Assad. Not like this. Scott Galloway said something on a rival network, the NYU business professor. He just pointed out the double standard that Israel has to live with. Cut 12.
2,200 American servicemen killed at Pearl Harbor. We go on to kill 3.5 million Japanese, including 100,000 in one night. 2,800 Americans in 9/11. We go on to kill 400,000 people in Afghanistan and Iraq. We weren't accused of genocide. You had, if Mexico had elected a jihadist cartel to run their country, and then they incurred into Texas, and on a per capita basis killed 35,000 people, or the population of the University of Texas, and on the way back took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under tunnels, what would we do? It'd be the great Sonora radioactive parking lot. But Jews are not allowed, and Israel is not allowed to prosecute a war. And they are prosecuting a war more humanely than we have done. The ratio of combatants to civilians is of civilian death to combatant mortality is lower than it was in Mosul, lower than it was in Japan, lower than it was in Germany. So there's just a different standard for Jews in Israel when it comes to prosecuting a war. They're allowed to fight back to a truce, but unlike America or any other Western nation that has attacked this viciously, they're not allowed to win a war. It's a double standard.
He's right.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that the fact that what he's talking about, this double standard, has had a real impact. I mean, when you see the European countries all backing a Palestinian state, despite President Trump saying this is rewarding Hamas, that's what has happened here. The American media, of course, has fallen in lockstep. And so President Trump's plan is a way out for everybody. It's a very good plan. It's very broad. It covers all of the bases. And I think that's why it's important that somehow Hamas has to be brought to the table, because let's assume this plan doesn't hold, Brian, then what? I mean, there's no alternative in sight. It's back to the war, back to the full-scale war.
Total annihilation.
Everyone is trying to avoid that, but Hamas, except for Hamas, they believe they have a strong hand here. I think what President Trump needs to say to them is what he said to Zelensky: you don't have any cards. Hamas doesn't have any cards beyond the hostages.
I hear you. Michael Goodwin's column says it all. The headline is Hamas hits a new low for being too slow. Thanks so much, Michael. Appreciate it. Hopefully you have some fantastic news, but it would be relatively unexpected. I'm a little bit more optimistic, but I understand there's still some hurdles. Thanks so much. Bottom of the hour, Senator John Kennedy is going to be with us. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
They are the ones that are making it a war zone. They need to get out of Chicago. If they're not going to focus on the worst of the worst, which is what the president said they were going to do, they need to get the heck out.
That is Governor Pritzker acting so irresponsibly as ICE, not individual gangsters, but ICE is the problem. Not the shootings, not the arrests, not the burglaries. But ICE is the problem, getting illegal immigrants off the system, off the payrolls, and the gang members out. So they said they're not reporting to them. Why would he report to them? He's already made it clear what he thinks of them. Why would the president report to them? He said, I'm here to give you help. He said, we don't want your help. Really, 54 shootings last night, 11 murders, and you're telling me your crime is heading in the right direction? Forget it. Yesterday, 30 Border Patrol agents were calling police, Chicago PD, for help, saying they are surrounded by these thugs, by these organized protesters. What were they going to do? Were they going to just ram right through these trucks? Were they going to go in reverse and do that? End up having to leave their vehicle. And then Fox finds out through Mike Tobin's great reporting, Bill Malusian and Matt Finn, that the cops were told, you better not help ICE. And they have the transmission. We even have the audio. Hopefully we'll get it within this show. And early, the federal agents were rammed and they were trapped and they were surrounded by 10 vehicles. Anti-ICE crowds were getting closer and closer, and the cops never came. That's how pathetic this is. And you think this is Donald Trump's fault because he didn't want the protesters and the illegal immigrants to run supreme throughout the second biggest city in the country? Here's Kristi Noem. Cut 22.
You know, I'm shocked by Governor Pritzker and his willingness to let murderers and rapists run his state and have a free-for-all against the people that live in there without making it safe for families. And that's what has been the most shocking to me, is to see these local governors and mayors not stand up for law and order. That we will go into Chicago, we will go into Portland, and we'll make sure we have the backs of our law enforcement. And that's what the Department of War is providing for us.
So they have in Chicago. Now they were going to send in some National Guard from Texas. Now they're suing to make sure the National Guard don't get there. But who else is going to back up ICE, ATF? Who else is going to back up the Border Patrol agents who are hunting them down? Then we find out that gangs, cartels, and terrorists are placing bounties on ICE and Border Patrol's agents. Remember when Governor Newsom says, take your mask off, what are you afraid of? In that press conference, was all show. Why is it all show? Because these are federal agents. You could say, take your mask off. It doesn't matter. They don't listen to states, governors, especially who mean nothing of what they say. So far, they found intelligence that shows it's $2,000 to kidnap an ICE agent, $10,000 to kill them. Kristi Noem said this on Fox and Friends. You don't believe her? Why would the Homeland Security Secretary make something like that up that's easily definable? And you could get the intelligence and find out for yourself. Here's more from our Cut 23.
They're making plans to ambush them and to kill them. We have specific officers and agents that have bounties that have been put out on their heads. It's been $2,000 to kidnap them, $10,000 to kill them. They've released their pictures. They've sent them between their networks, and it's an extremely dangerous situation and unprecedented. So we've
put protective detail around those individuals, change some of our operations to keep our officers safe. But make no mistake, this isn't just about, you know, protesting free speech or that they don't like that people out here are upholding the law of our country. They're actually going out there and saying, kill these people and we'll give you this much money to do it.
And it's out of control. Now, you think it's bad? Tom Homan can't live at home because he doesn't want to put his family in jeopardy because all these death threats on him. And these aren't people that are just angry. These are people that are well-armed, and they're people that are here. And the president is hurting their business. He's cracking down the cartels. He's sealing off the border. He's bombing the he's bombing the boats that are coming this direction with drugs and gangsters. It's not happening anymore. It's putting pressure everywhere. And who would have thought that most of the pushback would be coming from Democratic officials, even more than they're having trouble rounding up these gangs and these people overstaying their visas and creating havoc and lying about their backgrounds, like the superintendent over in Iowa. It's incredible. It's not acceptable, and we can't accept it as normal.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think that if the president decides that the negotiations are absolutely going nowhere, then there will start to be layoffs. But I think that everybody's still hopeful that when we get a fresh start at the beginning of the week, that we can get the Democrats to see that it's just common sense to avoid layoffs like that. And so I think that we think the Democrats, there's a chance that they'll be reasonable once they get back into town on Monday. And if they are, then I think there's no reason for those layoffs.
So that is Kevin Hassett saying layoffs could start. And we know the OMB director knows exactly what to do. Why? Because he came into that office thinking government's got to get smaller. $37 trillion in debt is not something to be laughed at. It's interest to be paid, sucking up all the life out of our budget. And if Chuck Schumer gets what he wants, we'll add $1.2 trillion back into the budget and we'll be paying what that rescue package wants us to pay. Remember the rescue package that Joe Biden put into play, despite the fact that Democrat treasurer under Obama, Lawrence Summers, and Jason Furman, who worked for Joe Biden, both said was against logic and would really hurt the economy. It was $1.9 trillion. In that funding was more money into health care. It poured money for illegal immigrants to go into the hospital, and these hospitals, instead of going bankrupt when they treated them, had money to lean on. Now it's time to bring that price down, to eliminate the pandemic funding. That's what's going on here. And in terms of eligibility, I found out that people now are eligible for Medicaid who are living 400% over the poverty level. That means people with combined incomes in six figures were getting subsidized for health care above what Medicaid was originally for, the handicapped or for people who are older and retired. Now they're pushed to the back of the line because these healthy people can now need their service, and now they get their subsidies. That's what they want to make sure stays in. Cut 27 is the speaker.
In a situation like this, where the Senate Democrats have decided to turn the keys to the kingdom over to the White House, they have to make tough decisions. Russ Vogt runs the Office of Management and Budget. He has to now look at all of the federal government, recognizing that the funding streams have been turned off, and determine what are essential programs, policies, and personnel. That's not a job that he relishes, but he's being required to do it by Chuck Schumer.
And the why they're doing it, Chuck Schumer got a blowback in March for doing a CR to get us to September. And now we're in September and October, and we need a CR to get us to November to finish up the work. Now, all the other stuff that could be talked about, the president is open to making sure that families in need don't lose their health care if it's at all possible. But it also knows our budget's unaffordable. So here we are. That's where we're at. But I want to hear some of the exchanges. So the big question now is, do we have money for illegal immigrants? Now, while there's not a number that says illegal immigrant bullet 11, there is money set aside for undocumented people because they have to be treated in hospitals. Listen to Mike Johnson push back on Face the Nation yesterday. Cut 31.
You know what they counter-propose? They want to spend $1.5 trillion, and they want to return hard-working taxpayer dollars to fund health care for illegal aliens. Yeah. It is in their bill. Go to speaker.gov and see it for yourself. Page 57, section 2141. They're using this for political games, and it is shameful, and real people are getting hurt.
Well, I have looked at that text. It doesn't explicitly say what you are indicating, but unauthorized immigrants aren't eligible
for
ACA benefits.
Yes, it does. It says very simply they want to repeal the changes that we made in the Working Families Tax Cut, the One Big Beautiful Bill. And
that's
what
right.
those changes were is it removed health care going to illegal aliens. It removed all the fraud, waste, and abuse. And the Congressional Budget Office, CBO, said it achieved the desired result. They project it'll save almost $200 billion. Chuck Schumer's proposal on page 57 wants to return that $200 billion of taxpayer funds to pay for illegal aliens and other non-citizens. That is a fact.
Right. And she wants to do these. She does these things where she makes these aside statements and she wants to just move on. And what you have to do with Margaret Brennan is you got to pull her back to answer the question. And that, to me, is what Speaker Johnson just did. He's fired up, as you could see him. He was just on live about 20 minutes ago. So Reince Priebus also broke down this shutdown and how preventable it is and how suddenly, even though the Washington Post says by 38% blame the Republicans and 30% blame the Democrats, he thinks the whole thing's ridiculous. Cut 32.
This is the most stupid thing I think I've ever witnessed in Washington, D.C. We passed the budget bill in July. The Republicans have offered a clean CR, which means we're going to keep funding the government for the next 6 weeks at the exact same levels that we've always been funding it. The same bill that the Democrats voted on four times, the same bill that Chuck Schumer argued for voting for numerous times on the floor. I mean, the guy, and by the way, what do they want to fund with this $1.5 trillion? And I'm ready to argue illegal immigration, because I know it inside and out as far as health care, Medicaid, state exchanges, emergency reimbursements through Medicare and Obamacare. They want to fund people who don't want to go to work, who are able-bodied, have no kids under 7 years old, no mental illness, and
you're
they want to
jump
fund
in here, I can
illegal
tell.
Immigration through state exchanges and reimbursements set up by Obama and Biden, 100% fact-check true.
So that is Reince Priebus breaking down exactly what's going on with the shutdown. Meanwhile, Senator John Kennedy is in studio, face-to-face, and I know he's nervous being around me. He can't put it into words. His book is now out, How to Test Negative for Stupid and Why Washington Never Will. Here's an example of Senator John Kennedy, unscripted and in action.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
We cannot run the greatest economy by putting fairy dust and unicorn urine in our cars.
He would go to meetings looking like a slob, looking like a fourth runner-up to a John Belushi look-alike contest.
I don't mean any disrespect, but it must suck to be that dumb.
Chuck and Hakeem need to go to Amazon, buy some testicles, and stand up to the loon wing of their party.
Life is hard, but it's harder when you're stupid.
And that brings us to the name of the book. Senator Kennedy, great to see you in person. Do you remember making those comments?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, but you know what, Brian? I don't get nearly enough credit for the stuff I don't say.
Really?
Yeah,
it's in your head.
When I bite my lip. How the hell are you, man?
I'm doing good.
See you.
Congratulations on the book.
You look kind of tired. You've been up all night counting your money?
Really? Do I look tired?
Yeah, you look great, man. You're what cool looks like.
Because I've been told by the staff I look as sexy as I've ever looked.
You look cool.
Right. Thank you.
You look cool. Thank you for having me.
So I'm reading the book, and they gave me the book version because they don't trust me not to resell it before it's released. But it is you. I mean, it sounds like like the audio book that's written. You know,
it's
totally your voice.
I sat down with a handheld dictaphone at my kitchen table. And wrote it, and then edited it, and edited it, and edited it. But look, it's not a policy book; it's a story book.
Yeah, you want to give people a sense of what it's like to be a senator.
I explain to people. I talk about policy through stories.
Yeah,
and the stories, some of them are funny, some of them are weird. They're all true. I try to explain in the book what the Senate's really like, what President Trump's really like behind the scenes, what Joe Biden is like, Chuck Grassley, a lot of different
stories. Because you knew Joe Biden when he – did you know – did you cross over when he was in the Senate or
I
only
didn't,
vice president?
But I was one of the few senators, Republicans anyway, to get to spend some time with him early on in his presidency, and I talk about that. I talk about stories about the media. The book, it's very wide-ranging. It'll – I hope it'll make you think. It'll make probably make you laugh. May make you day drink.
Day drink, and that'll be fine. You know? And that's not your speed, but you do point out that other people are into that.
If you read this book, you'll understand why we're in a shutdown. Senators are not like most teenagers. They're all over 40.
Right.
And they most senators have huge egos. They think they're brand names like Lululemon. The truth is most people have never heard of us. But this shutdown is not going to end until everybody takes their ego out back and shoots it.
I was really – are you surprised we're in it, especially when Schumer did the CR in March?
Okayed it?
I mean,
yes,
were you thinking, oh, we'll get a fire
Yes and no. After Chuck did the right thing and kept government open last March, he got the living hell bit out of him by the socialist wing of his party. So I wasn't surprised in that sense. But when I heard their demands, we didn't ask for anything. We just said, don't let government shut down while we negotiate six more weeks on a budget. And Schumer and the Democrats and the socialist wing and Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez said, no, we're going to shut it down unless you give us $1.5 trillion. And we get to tell you how to spend it.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, my mama didn't raise a fool. And if she did, it was one of my brothers. And all my colleagues felt the same way. And until they stop being on the pipe crazy, we're going to leave it shut down.
And right now, do you think that the president's going to take it to the point where they start letting go, firing federal workers?
I think the president's going to do what he's got to do. I talked to him 2 weeks ago when I saw this coming, and he said, Kennedy, I'm very comfortable. We've got a game plan. We're going to use it to reduce the size of government. And if you people want to do your job and open it back up, that's fine. I'm prepared to do what I have to do either way. And I know Russ Vogt. I think he's going to be even-handed, but I think he's going to punish some people the rest of their natural lives.
I think that the one thing people would say about you, especially going through the book as I have, you do your homework, you take the job seriously. You like to research.
I read a lot.
Right, you like to research. That's what you love to do, and on everything. And that's why you were on five committees for a while, knocked it down to four committees. That's a lot of work for your whole staff and for you. How many other people take it that serious?
Oh, many do. Some don't. I'm not going to bubble wrap it. Some don't. Some just
read their notes.
Yeah, they read their notes. They get a one or two page memo from the staff, and that's fine. That's their business. But you can't. I can't do my job that way.
Right.
If you like policy, you'd love the Senate. And I spend a lot of time reading about studying policy.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Senate's frustrating. Because it takes 60 votes to get something done. That's good and bad. Half of the job of a senator is to pass good ideas. The other half is to stop stupid ideas. That's why we have a 60-vote rule. But the Senate, well, how can I put it? The Senate only works when people aren't all crazy at the same time. That's pretty much how it works.
I will say this. Whatever you think of Republicans or Democrats, you're not talking about getting rid of the filibuster.
No,
you're not talking about adding two states.
Nope.
You know, you're not talking about fattening the Supreme Court.
Nope.
And you wouldn't have been, because you have no history of doing that, even if the Supreme Court was leaning left. That you don't try to change the rules if your team is losing. And that's what they're trying to do.
Well, you have to respect the institutions that our founding fathers established and that millions of people gave their lives to reaffirm.
And you say when you pull up to the Capitol, built in 1793 and rebuilt after the 18th War of 1812, you still get a charge out.
I still get goosebumps. And I don't want to ever lose that. I still get goosebumps sitting, standing, talking on the Senate floor. I do. Look, I mean, I think most Americans think America is the greatest country in all of human history. It is.
Are you worried about it?
Of course I'm worried about it.
More now than maybe 5 years ago?
I believe in competition. I believe in two parties. The Democratic Party is going through a huge struggle. And the socialist wing, the Bolsheviks wing, the loon wing is winning. They've taken over the party.
Look at the city you're in.
They're about to elect a socialist mayor of New York.
Ooh, and if you look at the socialist bullet points, they are flat out scary. If it was in another country, you can't believe it's going to happen to the city. Senator John Kennedy, a few more minutes with you. I don't want to take up too much of the other segment and make you totally unbalanced, because you are nothing but balanced. But this is a great time to order his book. It's out tomorrow, right?
Yep.
It's out tomorrow. It's called How to Test Negative for Stupid and Why Washington Never Will. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So Senator John Kennedy's here. He's pumped up for his new book, How to Test Negative for Stupid and Why Washington Never Will. Senator, the other big story, we talk about, you bring us inside Washington. So if those people want to get into politics or watch this stuff, you really bring us inside. You have fun with Senator Lindsey Graham. Do you want to give us an idea of what it's like work with Lindsey Graham?
Well, if you want to stump, look, Lindsey and I agree on a lot of stuff, but not everything. Right. If you want to stump Lindsey, ask him to name a country he would not bomb. he can't do it. I love Lindsey. Little known fact, I think I talk about this in the book, Lindsey was thrown out of junior high school 23 times in February alone. Okay. He is, I don't know, he's a cross between...
smart, though.
Oh, he's smart as hell.
Yeah.
But he's a cross between Dirty Harry and Socrates.
I know. And he's willing to cross at the right time across the aisle and drives a lot of Republicans crazy. But him and Trump, are you surprised that he and Donald Trump get along when John McCain, one of his best friends, didn't? Why was Lindsey able to adapt to the Trump style? And why was Lindsey able to and McCain not?
Well, Lindsey, two totally different personalities. Senator McCain wanted to be president. And he looked at President Trump and said, you know, I could do a better job than him. That's just how he felt. Lindsey has never desired to be president. He ran once, as he'll tell you. He said, I got 6 votes. And some of them were, most of them were my relatives. But Lindsey and the president disagree more than you realize, but they respect each other.
Behind the scenes, okay.
Yeah, and they talk a lot. President Trump, look, if I called him right now, I've got a cell number in my phone. If he wasn't busy, he would take the call. He wouldn't dodge it. Or he'll call you back within 2 hours. Now, he may call you at 2 in the morning. But yeah. I don't know when he finds the time. But at least with me, and I don't think I'm unusual, he's the most accessible president I've ever seen.
I watched Jake Tapper on Sunday. Jake Tapper said, I was texting with the president. Now, Jake Tapper has, you would not say that he is a Trumper.
No.
Right? But he's like, okay, you need answers on this? I'll give you. I just hope at some point people realize we're never going to have another chief executive like this.
No, he's
accessible. There's no grudges. Now, just be fair.
Now, part of the president's problem is, I've told him, he grows anxious when he has an unexpressed thought. He doesn't have to say everything,
right?
But he is the most transparent president, and he doesn't get enough credit for it. Like him or dislike him, you know where the president stands. President Biden, totally different. You couldn't find Joe Biden with a search party.
But you, when you talked to him early in year one.
I talked to him one time. I got more FaceTime with him alone than any other Republican senator.
And?
He was old then. He still had most of his faculties. But my impression after 45 minutes of talking to him was President Biden had reached the point in life where he just wanted to sit around, tell stories, talk about the good old days, and after he finished that, he wanted some hot soup and a nap. Now, I mean, it's just a fact, and that's why Steph Shieler.
Was forcing him to do this thing?
They were getting maybe 5 good hours out of the president at the beginning of his term. Look, we all get old. We all get old. We age differently. But there's no doubt that President Biden had a neurodegenerative disease. It's not a sin.
Right.
We all. Well,
but
yeah,
that. But these are the stories
that
are in
the book. But he was president of the United States.
Yeah, that's a problem.
For God's sakes.
And by the way, pick up your book, How to Test Negative for Stupid and Why Washington Never Will. That story's in the book. Thanks so much, Senator.
Thanks, Brian. You're the best, man.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're heard around the country, around the world. There's a lot of focus on this mayor's race, and more revelations come out about this guy, Zohran Mamdani. Big picture, I'm on the New York Post today. You know what the picture is? Him with the Uganda official. Okay, what's the big deal? Well, it turns out that Uganda official wants to give people life in prison for being gay. Now, a picture like that would need some explaining, but not in this race. Doesn't really matter. The socialist agenda. Oh, the gifted kids that are in our school system now. We have a great track and reputation for gifted children. Just so happens, we all know, I'm not one of them, that when those kids get into class, those gifted ones, you got to press them hard to get their genius out of them, right? Not anymore. Mamdani's going to make sure no more classes for the exceptional. That's a little. You think charter schools are good and effective, especially for minorities? Me too. Not him. So just so you know, the whole socialist agenda is beyond brutal. And this 33-year-old with no experience is on the cusp of doing something and winning. He's up by about 15 points. Even the polls are off. They got to be really off. Now I want to bring in Todd Lyons. One of the big stories happening in this country, and it's despicable, as I look at Chicago, as I look at Portland, is federal buildings have been targeted. ICE officials have been targeted. And they're getting no help from local law enforcement. What does ICE do? Pick up the illegal immigrant criminals amongst us. And because of that, and because of these local politicians putting a target on their back, they literally have been hindered from doing their job, and they have to wonder about their personal safety. Todd Lyons, I have never seen a weekend like this. As acting ICE director, how did you handle it?
Thanks for having me, Brian. It was to say it was a crazy weekend was, you know, an understatement. To have agents and officers ambushed by several vehicles, to have defensive gunshots fired, to have, you know, local politicians just actively call for more threats and violence against ICE officers and agents, to have cartels and gangs target DHS leadership. Never in my law enforcement career did I think we'd ever see this. On top of that, to have the Chicago Police Department stand down and not respond to their brothers and sisters in despair who needed help, they went ahead and they didn't respond and come to our aid.
So we're watching this now, and first they denied it, but then we got the actual transmission of cops being told to stand down in Chicago as your agents were boxed, your Border Patrol agents were boxed in. Do you want to tell us more?
Yeah, so obviously the person that boxed them in, one of them's a known domestic terrorist, right? She's been doxing agents and officers, especially with the Border Patrol, since late August. And here it is. It's a coordinated attack by several vehicles. The Border Patrol agents were essentially boxed in. Their vehicles were disabled. And then you have this person that's known to dox and have threats against ICE officers and in Border Patrol. She was armed with a firearm, and they had to defend themselves. But the call goes out, and ICE responded to help Border Patrol, but Chicago PD was right there. They could have taken over that scene. They could have, dissuaded the crowd, but no, the chief of patrol had them stand off. I felt bad for the poor dispatcher that had to give that command that officers weren't to respond there. You've never seen anything like this in law enforcement.
To me, it's like the Army not helping out. The Marines are trapped in Fallujah and the Army going, yeah, that's not my branch. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
There's no difference. Law enforcement is law enforcement. Everyone has a different specialty. What, do you not like ATF? You don't like the Border Patrol? You don't like the state police? You don't like the local police? You can't. It's not a lazy Susan. Pick what you don't want.
And, this type of the rhetoric, and if you don't like the ICE mission, that is fine. But you can't pit law enforcement against law enforcement, right? I guarantee the men and women of the Chicago Police Department wanted to come to the aid of the Border Patrol agents. They don't want to see any other federal officers or any other, whether it be state, local, county sheriff, they don't want to see any officers that are in trouble, get hurt, or even worse. So I guarantee you that was probably demoralizing for them. But the rhetoric about the ICE mission, which is a true law enforcement mission, has to stop, because in no world should other law enforcement officers be told not to go help other federal agents.
So we hear that J.B. Pritzker come out and say things like this, cut 13.
They are the ones that are making it a war zone. They need to get out of Chicago. If they're not going to focus on the worst of the worst, which is what the president said they were going to do, They need to get the heck out.
Are you focusing on the worst of the worst? And how do you feel about that statement?
100%. You know, and he says we're making it worse. We've always been there. So to the governor, I'd say even before January 20th, ICE has always been doing their law enforcement mission. Right now, we just have more manpower and stronger leadership that we're out there going after the worst of the worst. But I really wish that the governor would see for himself exactly what is going on, because we are going after the worst of the worst. It's in all of our media releases. You can see the bad guys we're highlighting. But it's not us. The protesters began turning violent at Broadview because the heated rhetoric from elected officials were directed directly at ICE. And it was, you know, we have, whenever you have leadership telling their citizens to actively resist ICE or to fight back, that's just wrong.
I want you to hear Mayor Brandon Johnson, who just said there's going to be no go zones for ICE in his city. Cut 17.
This is not about deportation. This is not about community safety. This president has declared war on poor people, and it's going to be working people that are going to lead the charge to transform this country and to push back against tyranny. This is the time now.
Declared war on poor people?
Yeah, I don't understand the mayor's comments on that. If you look at the operation that the Border Patrol ran with the FBI in the south side of Chicago, it was a apartment complex that was pretty much vacant that was taken over by known TDA gang members. So who is actually looking out for the safety of Chicago? If you have a known gang stronghold, wouldn't you want to work with the federal government? Because I guarantee they're preying on some of those poor communities that just don't get the help that they should. I mean, you had multiple people shot in Chicago all weekend long. And I don't know how they're saying we caused the violence, or we declared war on poor people, when we're out there in those neighborhoods trying to take these public safety threats out, these known gang members that are now a known terrorist organization.
So can I make a suggestion, Todd?
Sure.
I would love to see the mugshots. I mean, right. We know you're doing this. We know the Black Hawk was in the area. You had to do a takedown. It had to be well rehearsed and well executed. You should get the credit for it and call these guys out with facts.
Right. No. Yeah, you're 100% right, Brian. Like I said,
when you and I have talked before,
we do our due diligence in making sure we go ahead and we put up all the worst of the worst on our social media sites. But hey, maybe they don't want to come to our social media sites. Maybe it's time for a press conference when we have the old school photos up there, and we can walk the public through and actually have the public see exactly who we're taking out of their neighborhoods.
I'm talking to Todd Lyons, the acting ICE director. So I'm just going to give you – I'm going to play another cut, but I want to just get this specifically. They said you went into an apartment building and separated and put zip-tied children and women and separated their families and terrorized them. What do you say to that?
You know, I would say that there are so many fake images going around, and they're exploiting the fact that there were – family units inside of that apartment complex. And in any law enforcement mission, whether it's state, local, federal, you have to clear the whole entire scene. And if you can deem everybody safe, you do have to go ahead and either restrain some individuals or separate them till we can get the true people and who they are. It happens every day across this country in law enforcement. But they're exploiting it and twisting the words around just because of the fact that they don't like the ICE mission.
So I want you to hear Pritzker go after Kristi Noem. Cut 15.
The secretary doesn't know what she's talking about. She frankly says that people are clapping. They're not. They're booing her on the street, and they're booing ICE and CBP. They're marching, the CBP marching on a beautiful Sunday in Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. They're raiding neighborhoods where, instead of going after the bad guys, they're just picking up people who are brown and black and then checking their credentials. Are you a U.S. citizen?
Now, what is that based on?
So I think the fact that the governor is just going off of images he sees on TV, right? Secretary Noem was actually out there this weekend with threats to herself because she wanted to be that true leader and see exactly what's going on so she knows what the men and women at DHS are dealing with. Now, I would wish the governor was actually out there and we could actually show him who are actually arresting. But no, they want to just sit there and go off of social media, which they shouldn't. They should educate themselves and actually have a conversation with DHS and actually know exactly who we're going after. And I would say the people of Chicago are happy with what ICE has done in the first 2 weeks of, you know, Operation Midway Blitz. We showed that more than 50% of the people we apprehended were actually bad people, right? But Brian, like I said before, if we go out there and we're going to go ahead and try to make an arrest of one of these bad guys, and there might be another individual with them that is in the country legally, we're no longer turning a blind eye. We are going to take that person into custody as well. So that's one thing I'd say, too, with these sanctuary jurisdictions. If you don't want us in your neighborhoods, then give us these criminal aliens that you've already found a public safety threat that you locked up. Turn them over to us so we don't have to go out into your community.
So what happens now that the Illinois and Oregon are suing to make sure you don't put National Guard in? They were going to send Texas National Guard in if Chicago was going to be there. And now in Oregon, they're not going to allow California to go in. How does that hurt your operation?
You know, it just means that we have to dedicate more of our law enforcement officers to that security posture, whether it be protecting officers while they're out making those arrests or protecting our buildings. But it's not going to deter ICE. The men and women of ICE are dedicated to make sure that we are going after just what the president said. We are going after the worst of the worst. And we are going to be in these sanctuary jurisdictions like Chicago and Portland that release these criminal aliens back on the street. But we won't be deterred. Whether we have to put more of our special operations SRT teams out with our arrest teams to make sure everyone's safe, then so be it. But we're going to make sure that we are going ahead and fulfilling our law enforcement.
Senator Tammy Duckworth, on what you're doing, cut 20.
They lie. Right. The Trump administration lies. We have a president who's a known liar, and they've been lying about the situation all along. And in fact, they even shot tear gas grenades, I think, at a reporter who was simply driving by with her window open. And so we're urging our protesters, remain calm, peaceful protest, exercise your First Amendment rights, but videotape everything. Everybody has a phone. Tape everything so we actually have real evidence of what is happening.
So that type of attitude is not helpful. I just paid three different officials. So if you're not exercised, you are. If you tend to not like law enforcement, you now have a reason. But what about this journalist I keep hearing about?
You know, I still haven't seen that, Brian, but I can tell you one thing is for sure. We did have it wasn't ICE agents, but it was Border Patrol agents. And if you see every time they try to box these officers and agents in intersections or at red lights, or they sit there and they have a car or a motorcycle block it so they can run up and flatten the tires. That's not peaceful protest. And the only way for those agents to get out of the scene and to clear out of there so there's not more confirmation is to use less lethal options like tear gas or pepper ball. And, you know, that's not a First Amendment right for someone to block law enforcement vehicles, flatten tires, break the windshield. That's not, you know, I'm not sure what elected official would say at the peaceful protest of the First Amendment. That's mayhem. And, you know, the men and women of Border Patrol have to do what they can to get out of that area when they're being threatened like that.
So contrast that the way Memphis is going. You had Chicago and Portland. We know how bad that is, how tough sledding that is. Is it better in Memphis?
You know, I would say that in Memphis, the numbers speak for themselves. You look at the amount of illegal guns that they're getting off the street. You look at the number of felons that they're arresting.
273 arrests. They seized 73 guns in under a week, according to Pam Bondi.
Yeah. And you look at the cooperation between the FBI, the ATF, DEA, Homeland Security investigations. They're out there making a significant public safety impact in Memphis. And, you know, you have the support of the governor. You know, you have the local PD that's out there supporting as well. So I think that's a great example of that strong leadership that wants to go ahead and make sure that these, you know, these poor neighborhoods that are really under siege by a lot of these gang members and human traffickers, that the federal government's going in there with state and locals and actually making a difference.
I think so. Gregory Bravino, he's with the chief of the Border Patrol agent. He is also really ticked off at these lawmakers. Cut 24.
Those individuals like the governor or the mayor, they feed violence. They foment this violence. And I kind of scratch my head as to why they would do that. But they are actually feeding this violence and trying to get people hurt. I wonder if they actually want Border Patrol agents and ICE officers hurt. At this point, I've almost came to that conclusion. It's a sad fact, but they continually banter that rhetoric around. And I've not heard anything on the suspects that we've arrested, the bad people and bad things that we've arrested by the thousands.
He's got the same thing as you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad, right? You know, you do hear a lot of elected officials like I said before, either pushbacking on ICE or, in this case, the Border Patrol, or resisting, right? They're not highlighting or coming to the table having conversations about what we're actually doing to make their community safer. They're actually advocating resisting federal law enforcement. And that's what the problem is, because people are feeling emboldened, right? We've seen so many instances all over the media and social media as well, people putting up, you know, their own videos of actually ramming Department of Homeland Security vehicles or Border Patrol vehicles to either block them or impede them. So, I mean, in no society should that be right. That's the first thing I think elected officials would say, is that we can't have that on the streets. We can't have people actively resisting law enforcement, but they're not. They're actually calling for the active resistance to law enforcement.
And so what do you tell your men and women serving, last question, about the turbulence in Chicago and in Portland?
You know, my message to the staff all the time has been, make 100% everyone goes home at the end of the day. You know, we're a law enforcement family. Right. We take care of each other, but we're out there to do a law enforcement mission. And like I said, if we have to double our numbers to make sure everyone goes home safe at night to the families, then so be it. But we're not going to be deterred by these, you know, protesters or these elected officials that don't like that ICE is enacting the laws that many in Congress have created. But we're going to keep going and doing our mission, but we're going to do it safe.
All right, Todd Lyons, I appreciate what you're doing. I just hope law enforcement just breaks with their command and starts helping you guys out, because these people are not peaceful protesters. They are angry, they're disruptive, and they're looking to do some damage. And I think it's going to get worse. Todd Lyons, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
You got it. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Just a quick note. It's coming up quick. November 1st, Pottstown. This is the last appearance of the year in our show, History, Liberty, and Laughs. November 1st, Pottstown, Pennsylvania. We have a lot of listeners in and around that area. I hope to see everybody in person. We'll look to sell it out. We're already two-thirds of the way there. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com, and it's going to stream on Fox Nation. You go there, you get all these Fox Nation specials. We're watching a couple of stories here. Of course, the shutdown, lockdown. They said there's going to be a vote tonight at 5:30. I've not seen that elsewhere, but I know there's supposed to be one on Tuesday. What do I mean by that? There'll be a vote in the Senate to see if they'll pass the continuing resolution, which passed through the House. Now, I talked to Senator Kennedy, and he said, little by little, don't be surprised if Schumer slowly loses support. So he holds out. He looks like a tough guy. He's already lost three Democratic senators. Gary Peters is going to retire. Jean Shaheen going to retire. I mean, what are they holding out for? How does it help their political future? Ossoff, in a red state, wants to win another 6 years. So a lot of people need this vote, this lockout to end, and aren't siding with Democrats on this. So I might look for that. I don't think it's going to end Tuesday, though. Brian Kilmeade Show. David Kustoff next of Tennessee.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, it's certainly a yes to at least, look, it's Hamas, okay? So I'm not telling you here that these are people I trust 100%, nor should we, but they have said, basically, that they agree to his proposal and the framework for releasing the hostages. That's an enormous achievement. They've also agreed, in principle and generalities, to enter into this idea about what's going to happen afterwards, the Palestinian technocrats, et cetera. There's a lot of details that are going to have to be worked out there.
I hope there are Palestinian technocrats, and I'm not kidding, because we need people to work out the logistics to get the hostages out. And I hope if this thing is going to move, it's going to move in the next couple of days. Congressman David Kustoff is from Tennessee, Republican on the Ways and Means Committee, chairman of the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group, which is a parliamentary friendship group with the Israeli Knesset, which is great. Congressman, what level of optimism do you have right now?
Well, Brian, thank you for having me on. I'm glass half full. I think it's really encouraging that we hear the statements that we've heard recently from Secretary Rubio yesterday morning, the statements from the president. The proof is in the pudding. This is a very solemn time. We've just come past the Jewish High Holy Days. We are tomorrow one day away from the second anniversary of the horrific October 7th attacks. You know, when you think about it, when you try to think about it logically and rationally, it makes 100% sense for Hamas to try to take this deal that President Trump laid out last week, this 20-point plan. They need to release them. The estimates are that there are 48 hostages, 20 of whom are living, and those are best estimates. But the fact of the matter is that within the next day or so, or even 48 hours, Hamas has to release those hostages.
That has to happen. Now, if they're going to do their typical thing, say yes, and then have a slowdown, have all these problems, the thing that I think I'm more optimistic on is that we got these Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, for goodness sakes, United Arab Emirates, all going to be pushing on them, not just America and Israel. I want you to hear what Marco Rubio says of what Hamas has agreed to so far, cut for.
Obviously, we have to make sure Hamas is also doing their part in this regard. But there are a lot of opportunities here for whoever wants to sabotage it to do so. And that includes Hamas, by the way, or elements linked to Hamas sabotaging it by in fact, you know, creating conditions that are not viable for an exchange. So no one said this is going to be easy. This is good progress, but a lot of work remains. But it is the most significant development in this entire situation in a very long time. And it's the closest we've been in a long time to seeing a path towards the release of every hostage.
And what level, where is the optimism in Israel from the people that you know and from your contacts there? Are they thinking this is the type of deal they could sign off on, the majority of Israelis?
The Israelis are hopeful that this deal can be done. And in fact, just within the last few hours, I know that Prime Minister Netanyahu has dispatched some people to help further negotiate. To your point, this is a great opportunity for Hamas to try to get a deal done. It does make sense, but the fact of the matter is nothing is done until it's done. Hamas purposely tried to sabotage the Abraham Accords and deals 2 years ago that Israel was working on with the Saudis and others. So, look, they need to get the deal done. And I think with the Israelis, you're seeing that even some of the hardliners, at least on this first part, Brian, are hopeful that these hostages are going to be released. And all the other remaining parts of the 20-point plan are contingent on these hostages being released.
So we got two elements of Hamas, at least. One's in Doha, now in Egypt, and the fighting part is in Gaza. And this just came across in the Jerusalem Post. Turkey has made contact with the Hamas group holding the hostages. They told that to the Jerusalem Post. They have two Hamas groups holding the hostages with whom there has been no communication until now. This comes after 137 of the flotilla activists were to be reported from Israel over to Turkey. Earlier this month, Turkey announced the arrest of a Mossad agent, too, and opening up a criminal investigation there. They also announced, according to Israeli report, that they're going to start opening up flights from Turkey to Israel again. So Turkey seems to be playing, we've seen very motivated here.
And that's all positive. To your point, some of these countries and some of these other entities that have come to the table specifically to put pressure, if you will, on Hamas to try to get this done, we haven't seen that recently. And I do want to give credit, because I think it's important, to President Trump, because I don't think there's any doubt that without the president engaging, the frankly, Brian, the force of his personality to get all these disparate entities together and at least start talking, nobody else could have done it other than Donald Trump. I saw it with the Abraham Accords. But, you know, the time is ticking. It needs to get done within the next 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't imagine with everybody invested in it, if Hamas walks away, they will be the ones isolated. I mean, because one thing that they're pushing back on, they said, we need to keep our guns. You can take the rockets, put them in storage in Egypt, if you believe that, And, you know, but what about the rocket manufacturing facility? So if you believe that, and but they say we've got to keep our guns for defensive purposes. And they, I'm not sure that they've come to grips with the fact that they cannot have a role in the new Palestinian-controlled government in that area. So these are some of the things they're going to have to be pushed on.
And Brian, they cannot move the goalposts back. You know, President Trump laid out these 20 points as part of his plan last week. It should not be negotiable. What he set out is absolutely it's fair to all the parties involved. But at this two-year point of where we are from the October 7th attacks, I think that tomorrow, as we're all remembering the horrifics of that day, it's going to put even more pressure on Hamas. So I just don't see that if it goes much past October the 7th tomorrow in terms of Hamas releasing or not releasing those hostages, that it's going to really put them in a really hard spot. And my sense is that our government will give Netanyahu the authority that he needs to do whatever he thinks is appropriate.
Congressman Kustoff is with us. And Congressman, I just I tell you, too, the Jerusalem Post has the Hamas delegation arrived in Cairo. They gave an interview to the Saudi channel, and the source said that Hamas is committed to reaching an agreement to end the war in Gaza. Now, the other question I have that I can't answer is what's negotiated with Doha, is that going to transfer to the fighters? Like, do they really have control of the fighting force, whatever's left of it, fighting in Gaza? Because we know the Sinwar brothers are both dead, and most of the other higher-ups are all dead. So are these guys compliant with what Doha says?
And so those are all good questions. To your point, the top leadership, the top echelon has been eliminated by Israel. We don't know who is out there, who is kind of a lone wolf or lone wolves out there that won't respond to anybody and won't take direction to anybody. But let's get these hostages released, and then we follow through on the other 19 points of the plan.
We'll see what happens. A quick thing, when it comes to ICE, I understand, is Memphis responding positively, the people of Memphis responding positively to the stepped-up presence of National Guard, Border Patrol, ATF, FBI, as well as ICE?
Brian, the people in Memphis are mostly generally satisfied that President Trump came in and are thankful that President Trump has offered these federal resources. Memphis is a great city, Brian. I've lived there my whole life. Six Fortune 1000 companies. We've got Graceland, which is the second most visited residence in the nation, the National Civil Rights Museum. But the crime rates, the violent crime rates have been too high for too long. I'm a former United States attorney. We all welcome these extra resources. And when Pam Bondi announced yesterday that we've seen almost 300 arrests, I think 273 arrests. They pick somebody up who've been wanted for murder. People are applauding and they're happy. We just need to make sure that these short-term resources maybe can turn into full-time where we have extra FBI agents and deputy marshals on the ground after the surge leaves.
Yeah, I mean, are they talking about what's going to happen as a residual force?
Well, I'm trying to work with the administration on making sure that some of these resources remain permanent. And I realize that there are, you know, there are manpower issues all over. But I have no doubt that when this surge is over with, that President Trump is going to proclaim that Memphis is one of the safest cities in the country. And he'll be right. But we need to make sure that we keep the pressure on. That we have other extra deputy marshals and extra FBI agents and extra DEA agents and assistant U.S. attorneys that can continue the work that they've done during this surge. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, here in Washington, D.C., with the National Guard in a similar effort, you can tell the difference here. It feels safe. It is safer in Washington, D.C. And cities like Memphis and others, I know the governor of Louisiana is asking for resources for New Orleans and Baton Rouge. I think that everybody, every city who's seen these spikes in violent crime ought to welcome the help of the President of the United States to try to combat it.
Yeah, New Orleans, I'm very familiar with that, and I've been there a lot over the last few years, and they need help, a lot of help. Not only their prisons, but they have nobody. They have a terrible mayor, and they have nobody wants to be a cop. They don't pay anything, and the morale is terrible, so they really got to straighten it out in Louisiana. Lastly, just on this shutdown, basically the speaker said you guys can go home this week. Do you expect the Senate to try to pass anything? I know they're going to have a couple of votes.
So it looks like the Senate will vote on the same continuing resolution that we passed in the House on September the 19th, which very simply just keeps the government funded at the current levels through November the 21st. Whether John Thune can pick off another one or two or five senators tonight, I don't know. I think that any forward motion would be positive. You know, it gets real at the next federal pay period, which will be in the next few days, next week, when you have essential employees like some members of the military, federal law enforcement, air traffic controllers, people who have very stressful jobs, who are asking to come to work but not get paid. That makes no sense at all. And I've got to believe that there are some more Democrat senators that are going to come on board and try to get the government reopened.
I imagine. I just love we have listened to senators. Some are not going to take their paychecks during this time. But it's just amazing that the lawmakers get paid, but everybody else is told to suck it up. So it's and this seems totally preventable. We'll see how long it lasts. Congressman David Kustoff, thanks so much. Fingers crossed about what's happening over in Cairo right now. And hopefully we'll have some good news soon.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
You got it. Hey, when we come back, I see you out there in Daytona. I see you in Brooksville. I see you in Florida. And I see you in Louisville, Kentucky. Get on board. I'm going to try to get through as many calls as possible. Before we go on this hour, Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
We have a year before this country becomes a full-on autocracy and democracy completely leaves us. And we're looking at the election in 2026, and Donald Trump knows that in a free and fair election, he will lose. We have to make the public absolutely aware that their democracy is being taken from them. And we have to do everything we can to make sure people understand that. People don't, it's a vague term, democracy. It's like, what does that mean? The Constitution, we don't know what that means.
What is he talking about? Does he think we're all idiots except for Rob Reiner, the genius? This guy is so unhinged and so incredibly out of his mind. Remember in that book that's just released by Kamala Harris, and even in Jake Tapper's book, it talked about Rob Reiner screaming at Doug, the husband of Kamala Harris, saying, because of you, we're going to lose our country. As if Doug is control of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden or whatever. He screamed at him right after the debate. Kamala Harris would eventually become the nominee. And Rob Reiner has been crying ever since. So I have no idea. 60 Minutes did a feature on him. I don't know what significant things he's done. I think he's a director, proven director, producer. He's never really, in my mind, left the title Meathead. And he continues to show himself every day. We're going to lose democracy. How many times have you heard that with Donald Trump? Just a quick note. I don't know if Rob Reiner wants to go or not, but if he does, there's tickets available for the Patriot Awards. Go to foxnation.com or Ticketmaster and get tickets. Please don't miss out. The whole front is all sold out and most of the back. So there's some great seats in the middle at the Tillis Center in LIU. So make the trip. There's great hotels around that area where you could stay in the city, hop on a train, it'll bring you right there. Patriot Awards, they're going to be, I was briefed. I can't give you any hints. There's going to be unbelievable guests and awards. And if you love the country, year 250, this is the perfect way to kick it off. FoxNation.com/Patriot Awards. Meanwhile, let's go to the phones. And let's go out to Lara in Louisville. Hey, Lara.
Hi. I just was wanting to tell, like, the world that who doesn't think that we're giving money to aliens. Yes, we are for medical. I am a nurse reviewer for one of the major insurance companies that has received Obamacare since the very beginning. And an example, I'll do 20 authorizations a day, 15 of those names I can't even pronounce. And a lot of these doctors have now started documenting where they come from. And then, you know, we've had cases where they go back home, they come back, they bring back infections. We're putting in heart valves for them because they get infected. A lot of them are drug users. I mean, it's horrible. So, it amazes me that people will still stand up there and say that they are not giving money to illegal aliens.
Thank you. Thank you very much, because you brought out the true story, Lara. It's not so much a box check, give illegal immigrants healthcare. It is money that pours into these hospitals in these blue cities that allows them to take them as a priority because they get full reimbursement. So that's what screwed. That's what was inflated during the pandemic. Also, the fact that you now are eligible for Medicaid if you're 400% over the poverty line. That means you could be making six figures. Gary in Daytona. Hey, Gary.
Really? Thanks, Brian. Really quick. The states, whoever governs the states and the local mayors are the ones that control and put ICE in so much danger. In Florida, we don't have people blocking intersections. Governor DeSantis made it, and he made it very clear. If you throw something, you're being arrested. And if you use an automobile, your chances are you're going to be shot. And the other quick thing is, I love the people that are saying how violent crime is down in their state, but carjacking is up 180%. I've never heard an interviewer the people say how much they enjoyed being carjacked.
Great point, Gary. That's pretty violent. Appreciate it. Hey, see you in person November 1st, BrianKilmeade.com, Pottsville, Pennsylvania.